Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik from Sweden. This is Independent Internet Radio. Hope you had a good week. Hope you're doing well overall. It's good to talk to you once again. On our website, redicecreations.com, you can find much more of what we cover. News, radio, TV shows, and a whole lot more that we're working on right now. We are talking with Mr. David Icke today, one of the most well-known authors and speakers, I would say, within the conspiracy field. And we're going to talk about his latest book, The Perception Deception. We'll just dive right in, so stay with us, everybody. Hi, David. Welcome back. Thanks for coming on with us again. It's good to hear your voice. Hope you've been doing well since we last spoke.
A pleasure, Henrik. Yeah, it's been interesting. We're not quite 12 months. Actually, it's been an interesting 2 years or so because I've produced the biggest book I've ever produced. I did the Wembley event in 2012, and then I had the idea to start a television station, putting this information out 24/7, and put that little lot together. And there hasn't been much time for anything else.
No, exactly. I mean, it's amazing in terms of what you've managed to produce and get out to the public in that way, because there's so much material in there. I think that Perception Deception, your latest book, has to be the most comprehensive book, at least since The Biggest Secret. But I would say it's like all books crammed into one, pretty much, and a bit more than that as well, actually.
Well, it's nearly 1,000 pages. It's got about 900 odd illustrations and images, and 32 pages of original artwork. So it's a comprehensive book. And you know, there comes a point, you know, I've been doing this now for nearly a quarter of a century, and all the books have been a progression. I said when I did the introduction to the first one back in 1990 called The Truth Vibrations, that I'm starting a journey and maybe you'll come with me. And that's what it's been. And each book has been a progression in the story. In a way, each book has taken a step further down the rabbit hole. But each one has also had its specialization and its own personality and its own particular focus. For instance, The Biggest Secret had a massive focus on Satanism, on mind control, and on pedophilia among the elite and bloodlines that are connected to that, and so on. But the Perception Deception, you know what it's like when you're going along a journey of trying to understand more and more and more about what you're looking at and how it all works. And there are days when the kaleidoscope moves, when you wake up one morning or maybe in the middle of the day, suddenly the kaleidoscope moves and suddenly you can see it clearer than you could see it a minute ago.
Yeah.
And when I was writing The Perception Deception, it took me about 18 months in total, but 2 years overall, because I stopped to do the Wembley event, which was like the one this year in October. It's just a massive piece of preparation. I mean, I stand there and talk for 10 hours and ad lib it, yes, but the preparation, research preparation, images preparation, and everything that goes around it is absolutely enormous. And it was about 18 months or 2 years that it took to write. And in that period, I reckon three or four times the kaleidoscope moved and suddenly it became so clear. And in the end, any genius is in seeing the simple in the apparently complex. And all genius is simple anyway. And so what we call reality must be the ultimate simplicity. It must be so simple. The way it plays out seems ever so complex because there are so many facets to it, endless facets to it. But at its core, it's dead simple. And the more I wrote and researched the book, the simpler it got. And the other thing that happens is you learn through experience what's interesting and what's really, really relevant. And there's tons of stuff that's really interesting and fascinating, but it's not absolutely relevant to actually understanding the nature of what we're facing and the nature of the reality we're experiencing. So you start to learn more and more about what to leave out and what to leave in. And although it's nearly 1,000 pages, it doesn't dwell on anything for long. What it does is connect a fantastic number of dots, which on the surface don't connect at all.
Yeah.
And you can really only understand where we are if we understand what's led to this and what's behind this. And I call it the perception deception, because this for me is the foundation of everything. You know, the whole manipulation, the whole conspiracy in all its multiple forms is actually a perception deception, because you can't control billions of people physically. Not that there is a physical, but you know what I mean. Yeah. You can't control them physically. There's too many of the target population and not enough of you. Now, when you get to a point where you've got them microchipped so that you are externally manipulating their perception that way, when you've got them taking drugs, which is manipulating their perception, when you've got them in a complete slave situation, akin to the Hunger Games or that movie that really captured it in so many ways, called Equilibrium, came out about 2003. When you get people into that state, then you can start physically controlling them, because you have control of their minds to such an extent, and you have control of their movement to such an extent through 24/7 detailed surveillance that you can start to do it. But until that point arrives, you have to do it by perception. And even in that extreme state, you're just controlling perception, just in a more extreme way. And so when I look at society, I just see perception manipulation everywhere. It's in so many fundamental areas of our life. First of all, the education system. The education system is a perception manipulator's dream, in the sense that you take children increasingly now, earlier and earlier ages, 3-4 years of age, and you know they're not long out of the womb, and already now they're sitting there, and there's a control figure in the classroom who's telling them where they can go, when they can go, what they can do, what they can't do, what's right, what's wrong, what's moral, what's immoral, all of it. And then through that period, right into the teenage years, the system's representatives and the system's information download system called education is in control of most of what they hear and see and perceive. And then you have simultaneous with that, you have the mainstream media that's confirming all that the education system's telling them, and going on into adulthood when formal education's finished, again telling them what's right and wrong, what's happening, what's not happening, who's good, who's bad, what's moral, what's immoral, what this story is behind this world event, and all of it. And it's constantly creating a situation where people are downloading the system's version of reality. And if you're not strong in terms of being truly conscious beyond just five sense mind, then you're going to download that information, and it's going to become your perception. Is you're going to be your sense of self, your sense of the world, your sense of everything. And of course, all the people around you, unless you know they're conscious beyond mind, they've been through the same system, including your parents from a very early age.
Yeah.
And they are confirming that everything you have taken to be true, because the system's told you, is actually true. And so I've used this analogy before, but I think it's very powerful. You're born into a madhouse, and that's all you've ever known. You've not left it. There's walls around the madhouse, and you grow up among the madness, among the insanity. And to you, that ain't madness and insanity at all. It's normal. This is normal. This is how it is. And so once anyone, you know, knocks on the door and comes in and says, hey, this is a madhouse, this is crazy, what are you doing? You're the crazy one, because you're challenging their sense of normal. And that's why, Henrik, throughout history, when people that have been more aware, more conscious, have actually challenged the status quo and exposed the prison, And the way the prison works, well, the prisoners have immediately started to attack the person that's telling them how it is. That great line in the first Matrix movie where Morpheus talks about people being so programmed, so inert, that they'll fight to save the system that controls them or protect the system that controls them. That's what you have. And it's my view, after, you know, observing things for a long, long time, that it's quite possible, and I think it's the norm, frankly, that people can go through an entire lifetime without having an original thought or emotional response that didn't come from the program.
Yeah. Isn't that scary?
Yeah, but I think it's true. I mean, if you look at it, when you are sitting in front of a computer, as I am at this minute, you put information into the computer, and then before you press enter, you know what the computer's going to do, unless it's malfunctioning. You know what it's going to do because it's programmed to do that when you put that information in. And if you look around the world, there are exceptions, but they're rare, that if you put people in certain situations, they're invariably going to react pretty much the same. It's a reflex response. And it's my view, and I go into this in the perception deception, that when we read these accounts in the ancient world, all different parts of the world, about some interbreeding between a non-human force and humans to create hybrid bloodlines and what have you, but a manipulation of human genetics in general, through whatever means, technological or whatever, I would say that you know, a lot of people, and the Bible indicates this in the Garden of Eden, a story that you find all over the world in different forms, that was kind of the creation of humans. I don't think that was what was happening at all. I think it was a genetic tinkering with what was there before.
Yeah,
and that. Because, as I've been saying for years, the body is a biological computer. You can put programs into it. You can put programs into its genetic structure, which will act like in response to a situation, like pressing enter on a computer. And I think there are emotional programs running through people that are constantly dictating their responses to life. And if you are a force, and I strongly suggest that this is what we're dealing with, that actually feeds off human low vibrational emotion, then if you can put emotional, low vibrational response, emotional programs into the computer software, if you like, and they are designed to react to certain situations, most of them surrounding the emotion of fear, then you are creating, in this time that we're in now, billions of, if you like, generators of the very energy that you feed off. And I see this when I observe people. Also, when you go into states of being, where states of awareness, where you are observing your, if you like, human self, your
right,
your mind self, from another state point of attention, you can see how this brain chatter, this mind chatter that's constantly going on in people's heads, is actually not coming from that point of consciousness that you move to when you go into other states of awareness. You're actually observing this computer chattering away, and you can feel or you can observe emotional states that are in no way coming from that level of observation in the greater expanded awareness. And it's like, you know, I talk to people and all around the world, and this is a common theme, and I've had it myself over the years sometimes, well, a lot of time when I was younger, and that is this underlying anxiety, which has often no explanation in the situation that you are facing at that time. My mother used to have a saying that she used to say about people, which was funny because she should have said it about myself, about herself, my mother. She used to say, it's being so miserable that keeps them going. And my mother used to be addicted to worry. And this is an interesting point, because people get addicted to low vibrational emotion, because all emotion, part of the expression of emotion is that it's a chemical process on one level. And the receptors on the cells that receive things like cocaine and heroin also receive the chemicals generated by emotion.
Right.
And people get addicted to emotional states. So if they, you know, it's like if you're not worried about something, it's the case of my mother, she wasn't worried about something, then she had to find something to worry about, because she was going into cold turkey. She needed a fix. You know, there's that song, Addicted to Love. And that's another thing. When you have that rush, not of love, actually, but of attraction, not love in its true sense, but of attraction, that generates a certain chemical response in the body. And people can get addicted to that. They are the people that go into relationships and they're head over heels, and then suddenly when that initial rush dies down, then they want to go somewhere else. They're off to someone else because they need that rush. And so there are many levels to which people are attached to emotion. I say they're if you like, vibrationally attached through the equivalent of a biological software program, which is, you know, dictating their responses overwhelmingly. But there's also a chemical element to that, which people can get addicted to. And it's once you're in there, it's difficult to break out of it, because it's almost like when you're offered a positive way out of something. I've seen this in so many people, Henrik. I don't know about you, but
yeah.
Someone's in trouble. They're not very happy, but they're getting their fix. And then someone offers them a way out of their unhappiness and a way to what they say they want. But they'll find a way of not going there.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they're still holding on to the fix. And they don't know they're doing that, but they are. It's addicted to worry, addicted to fear, addicted to anxiety, addicted to love and in its attraction sense. So I think that while we have freedom of thought and freedom of emotional response within the greater consciousness, beyond this manipulated tiny frequency range we call the world, I think we have, unless we are coming from that level of consciousness and observing this world from that point of observation, so you actually can see what you're dealing with, I think people have far, far less freedom of thought and freedom of emotional response than they think, because I think you know, if they're pulled into that level, that five sense mind level of perception, thus awareness, then the software has them.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Now, one thing I really like about the book as well is the way you've kind of just incorporated the whole concept of the archons into the main narrative, if you will, and on top of that, of course, kind of dividing it up and explaining the different components of it, basically, and how it works. But how would you, it's tricky to do maybe in a nutshell kind of thing, but what is the deception in regards to our perception? I mean, we see the world around us, we're experiencing it, we can feel it, you know, to a certain extent can understand it. But then what you're describing, of course, is a deeper level to what actually is going on underneath everything. And I mean, most people are not even aware enough to understand the physical reality around them. They're not even conscious of that. So to expect them to, you know, go a step further beyond that is something that few people seem to be able to reach to that point, if you know what I mean, David.
Yeah, I mean, when we say, you know, what is this world? Well, it's something we're decoding into an apparently physical reality that cannot be physical. And even, you know, the quantum physics arena and what mainstream science can appreciate that. So what is this world? You see, we have the feeling that we are in the world and we're experiencing, therefore, something outside of ourselves. The world that we perceive as the physical world we interact with all the time is actually only exists in that form in our decoded state, i.e. in the brain at that level. And so you can look into the night sky and you can see all those stars, and they're, I don't know, millions and billions of light years away, and oh, this is so far away. And yet in the form that you are perceiving them, in that what I would say is holographic state, they only exist in a few centimeters of the brain, which decodes the visual senses into something we perceive to be something that we're seeing, when it's actually something we are decoding. This is really important, because if it's something we're decoding rather than something we are in, i.e. a physical world all around us, then that means they who control the information we're decoding dictate our reality on that level.
Yeah.
But also, if you take this reality in its base state to be what I call the cosmic internet, the cosmic version of the wireless internet, if I'm on the internet, I'm attached to a global collective reality, which can be accessed by anyone all over the world that has a computer that can access the internet, fine. But then I'm choosing where I'm going on the internet, and I'll choose something different to someone else because of my state of perception. Something that would interest somebody with another perception will not interest me. Thus, I go my way on the internet, the collective mind, the cosmic internet, and they go their way. And so, it's not just that the information that's given to us to decode dictates our reality. It is our own perception is constantly dictating what part of that information we will decode and what we won't. I mean, there's an amazing figure that's in the book somewhere from mainstream science, that every second we are taking what they call impressions. I guess it's a bit like a still photograph, impressions of reality. And we're turning them into the reality we perceive to be part of. And it's something like 10 million impressions that we're taking every second. And according to mainstream science, the brain takes 40 of those to construct our reality second by second.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that if people imagine a wireless internet field as the prime base construct of this particular reality, then it's the perceiver who is deciding what part of that energy field in its multiple facets that you are taking from it. And part of that is the frequency you're operating on, but it's your perception is dictating that. And so if you look at social engineering, therefore, and different forms of individual and collective mind control, you take the analogy of a stage hypnotist, all those different things are manipulating what we decode into a perceived reality. It's like for instance, a simple thing, the Chinese computer system, that is firewalled so that it will not decode great chunks of the internet that the authorities don't want you to see. What if, and I suggest this is actually what's happening, that our decoding systems, through genetic manipulation and other means of perception manipulation, were actually firewalled so that we're only decoding a fraction of what there is to decode, and that is why visible light is so narrow, the band that we can turn into a visual world.
Right. Yeah.
And it's my this is my view, which I outline in detail in the book after 25 years nearly of researching this, that what the Gnostics said about the Archons in the Nag Hammadi text found in 1945 in Egypt is very, very close to the truth. I'm using the term archons now for a simple reason, just to simplify it, because take reptilians, take greys, take the jinn of Islamic belief and pre-Islamic belief, take the various names that shaman use, take the demons of Christian belief. They're all the same thing. You know, yeah. People. I have to smile a little bit when suddenly, you know, when the information started circulating about the Nag Hammadi Gnostic texts find in 1945 and what was in it, and they used the term archons, and it was like, well, archon. That's it. And it's like, oh, he's using archons now. He's joining us. No, I'm not. I'm using a term that all over the world is describing something that there are endless names for. I could use demons just as easy as archons.
Right.
I
mean, yeah.
So, but what they say,
it's a bigger concept there. You know, yeah. what that message, you know, what that relies on, that what you're trying to communicate. That definitely.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is that one of the biggest pennies to drop for people when you look at this is when you realize that all these different names in different cultures are describing the same force. Look at how they describe it. They're describing the same force. And so, you know, I've used archons in the book because it just simplifies it. But it's actually not a departure from what I've been writing about before with reptilians and stuff. And because I said in earlier books that, you know, the reptilian entities were not the end of it. There was another force that didn't take form that was actually behind them. And that basically is what the Gnostics were describing with the archons. And of course the Gnostics, the pre-Christian Gnostics of Great Library of Alexandria fame and later Cathar fame and all the other expressions of them, they use the term Gnostics or Gnosticism, you know, knowledge, but it was not learned in college, learned in school knowledge. It was a deeper awareness knowledge, a true knowledge, an innate knowledge. And what they described in the text that seemed to have been, you know, buried something, the estimates are about 400 AD maybe written much earlier, centuries earlier. What they describe is absolutely stunning to me when I read it because of what I'd come across before and how they describe the archons in the sense that they are energy in their base state. I've interacted with them here and there in their electromagnetic form. But the way that they say that these energetic archons can take form, and that the two main forms they take are reptilian and like an unformed baby or fetus with gray skin and darker moving eyes, i.e. the classic grays. When you consider when that was written, That is stunning, and it indicates something that I've been talking about for a long time, and that's the fact that, you know, this manipulation, this archontic manipulation, shall we say, that takes the form of reptilian entities and other different forms that they take. It's been going on since way, way back in the illusion of time. So when people were knocking rocks together, these entities existed, and they had the level of knowledge they have now in terms of the manipulation. But what has happened is that they have manipulated the human frequency, if you like, the human dimension, to the point where they have brought humans to the point where they have the technological capability of completely imprisoning themselves, not least through transhumanism and such like.
Right.
But they have not been brought overwhelmingly to, in fact, they've been suppressed from getting to a point of awareness where they realize that's what they're doing. And, you know, it's my view that what we call the archons at an energetic level are actually expressions of a distortion, an energetic distortion. If you look at what the Gnostics call the Demiurge, the Lord Archon, Mr. Big, if you look at what people call Satan and the devil in all its different forms around the world, people, you know, it's portrayed as some figure with, you know, horns and a tail. And well, my view is that that prime generator, that prime foundation of this archontic energy, which expresses itself in various forms, is actually an energetic distortion. If you think of a calm, balanced American landscape in the Midwest, and everything's calm and everything's fine and everything's balanced and everything's kind of joyous, and then a tornado comes through it and all hell breaks loose. And you know, if you symbolize this distortion I'm talking about as like a tornado coming through, I think it's very close to what we're looking at. There was a time when this reality was far in advance of where it is now, where people were much more conscious, were much more aware of the interconnectedness of everything, where we did communicate with animals and nature and trees, and because we were communicating on an electromagnetic, on a thought level, without words, and it was in many ways the ancient paradise that many cultures talk about.
Yeah.
And then came this massive distortion, and I think the distortion as it would, played out in the holographic world as fantastic geological and planetary catastrophes, which people like Velikovsky and more recently people like David Tolbert talk about. And this distortion, like everything is in all existence, it has an awareness. And you take a distortion that is distorted so that it does not see life in a balanced way, does not see situations in a balanced way, but it has self-awareness. You have a situation where the distortion, a self-aware distortion, has the ability then, or the capacity, to seek to impose itself on other areas of reality or energy, which at that time were not distorted, but it wants to draw them in. And if you are a distortion, you are a certain frequency band, and it's a different frequency band from balance, from harmony. Thus, if you want to feed yourself and energize yourself, then you need to create energy that will generate the frequency that you are feeding off. Otherwise, you cannot feed off it. And one of the great expressions of this distortion, as you would expect, is what I call inversion. Everything's inverted. So there's that that great quote from a guy called Michael Elner about everything being backwards and upside down.
Yep.
Just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The major media destroys information. And religion destroys spirituality. If you look at the world, it is inverted, because this holographic world that we experience, I suggest, has become increasingly more now than ever before a holographic expression of the distortion. So you expect everything to be inverted. So you get inversions all over the place, like let's bomb Tripoli and let's bomb Libya to protect the civilians from violence.
Right.
everything's twisted. Everything's upside down. There's a reason for that. And, you know, when a tornado is hurtling through a landscape, it's pulling into its vortex all and sundry, houses, cars, if it's powerful enough, and it's doing it by the energetic power by the power of the wind that the vortex creates. And you know, if you look at the electric universe level of this and the way that, you know, electromagnetism and electricity is at one level fundamentally a part of this universe, where you look at a tornado, it's a fast rotating electromagnetic field. And so in many ways, if you're talking about it as the fast rotating electromagnetic field, and we're talking about this distortion and these archons being energy in their prime source, then the analogy gets even better with a tornado. So,
sorry to interrupt, David. Let me ask you, though, do you think that it's a natural, phenomena, that the distortion that you're talking about? And because, to a certain degree, I can understand that it might hold even a deeper purpose for us, like a force that actually at the end of it could act for something that would get us off our asses and try to get us out of the, you know, comfort zone a little bit and try to reach out there and get to somewhere else. Or is it a completely kind of negative force that is artificially created for the, you know, for enclosing us into the illusion further? What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's a big question. You know, my jury's out on that, and I look at both sides of that. But if you look at a tornado, it's created at a time of great electric and electromagnetic happenings in the atmosphere. So it's a child of a environment, which that environment eventually manifests like that, out of that, you know, sort of electrical storm, that electrical state in the atmosphere. So what actually made it happen in the first place? You know, my jury's out on that. But if you look at a tornado draws things into it because of the rotation and because of the wind that's created and all that, the distortion that the Gnostics call the demiurge is pulling forces into it through frequency compatibility. And so if it's going to do that, it has to draw its targets into its frequency layer, if you like. And there was that Native American concept of the wolf inside people, the two wolves inside people.
Yeah.
They said that one is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. And it said one wolf is good. It's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion. And I would look at that and I would say that those two wolves, if you like, are different vibrational states. And the expression of the distortion, if you get pulled into it, manifests as the anger, the envy, the sorrow, the resentment, the arrogance, all that stuff, ego. And if you open your heart and express love in its true sense, and you hold integrity and all those things, your vibrational state cannot be lassoed by the distortion. Thus, you perceive life in a completely different way. But because this world that we're living in, or we think we are, is an expression of the distortion made holographically manifest more and more as it's got more control, we are constantly living our lives in situations that are designed to draw us down. And think of someone who's suffering from austerity, someone fighting a war, someone who has people fighting a war that they love, people who are caught in 9/11, people that are caught in Tripoli, and so on and on and on, it goes. And then you look at the additives in food and drink. You look at the way the electromagnetic field has been dramatically changed in the last 50 years by yeah. millions and millions of times in terms of the increase in technological generated radiation. Yeah. You look at all that, and it's all designed. Many other reasons for it as well, but primarily to draw us into this distortion. And these archons, I would suggest, are expressions of that distortion in eventually at one level apparent form, like reptilians and greys and what have you. So we are then led to believe by many people that to respond to the situations manifested by what I would say is the distortion, that we have to fight for peace, fight for freedom, fight for rights. We have to fight the system. But what do we do when we do that? We just get pulled further into the distortion. That's what the distortion wants. There are so many expressions of this distortion. I see it in people, even what I call robot radicals, those of the left, not all of them, but those of the left who think they're fighting the system when they're being played by a violin by the system.
Yeah.
And you get people who say they're fighting for good and they're fighting for justice, and you realize that actually fighting for justice is their persona. The justice is less of a focus for them than the process of fighting for justice, because that gives them a persona. I'm a good person, I'm fighting for justice. It's like a prop. Justice becomes a prop. Peace becomes a prop. Fair treatment becomes a prop. The greater good becomes a prop, not the prime theme. Because one fantastic expression of the distortion has you is the me, me, me mentality. Because what the distortion is trying to do all the time in its multiple forms is to break up the unity of the target population, in this case, into warring factions. Now, you can play groups against each other. That's one level of it. You can play, and what you do is you isolate one group and you isolate another group, and then you play them off against each other. You do it with religions. You do it with factions within religions. You do it with political parties. But the greatest form of divide and rule is me, 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 because that doesn't divide a group from a group. It divides an individual from everything else.
Right.
Because the it's what about me? What's in it for me? All decisions are made by what's best for me rather than what's best for the greater good, which brings us all together. That brings unity. Me, me, me brings individual disunity from all other existence and all other expressions of individual points of attention. So me, me, me is massive. And if you observe society, you see that me, me, me is the greatest force of human oppression and suppression when you get down to it. Because even in a simple example, people in uniform, I'll give you a quick story, which just, it's a simple story, but it just encapsulates the massive concept that I'm talking about. Yesterday, we're parking a car in London, and of course London is just, for parking tickets and fines, it's just insane. And anyway, a lady is being given hassle by this traffic guy in uniform, and I called him over. I said, look, did you realize that you're fining people, giving them tickets for things that are not a problem? I mean, there's hardly anybody parked in the street, and you're giving tickets out. I said, do you understand the impact that you're having on lives with £60 or more fines of people who are already struggling? I mean, do you not think about the impact? And I said, it's all a scam, you know. It's not about traffic management. It's about getting as much money as possible for the local authority. Yes, he said, it's terrible. I don't agree with it. but you're handing the tickets out.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on. Wow. Why? Because it's the best for me. It gives me a job. Now, I can understand the mentality at a time of austerity of someone who does that. But you see, if people put the greater good first, they'd say, sorry, not doing it. And if you don't do it, and everyone has that idea, well, it doesn't happen. But because people will put a uniform on and they'll follow orders. Many, many police officers do this every day. Not enough, mind, but many. They'll perceive that actually what they're doing is not, not right and not fair and not just, but they'll do it anyway because it's to keep their job. And so when you look at me, it is the fundamental divider and ruler of the target population. And until we start collectively putting the greater good first and saying not in any situation, what's in it for me, what's best for me, but what's the right and just thing to do in these circumstances, then this me, divide and rule will go on, which potentially, I don't know, we're over 7 billion, so they tell us, potentially me can create 7 billion isolated points of attention, isolated from the rest of this human family.
Yeah, and just connected to the bigger, you know, the bigger picture also, that individual action has a repercussion, you know, in the greater world. But it's an interesting story you mentioned that, because there, it's evidence of no principles, no morality in terms of, you know, inner understanding. It's just about what's on the piece of paper. That's what defines my rules and my and the law. And that's moral. That's okay. But I mean, there has to be a stance there. There has to be that type of mentality have to come to some kind of understanding about itself, that this is what's creating problems in the world. And I bet you too that person, David, they hate their job. They don't want to be there, you know. So, like, where do you? That should be their driving interest. As a self-interest, should be to quit that job and to find something else to do, and to create not only a better place for other people, but for themselves as well. But even that basic understanding doesn't seem to be there. That's scary to me.
But this is the program, I would suggest, Henrik. It's the default position. When you've got a program, another quick story. I spoke in Pasadena years ago, and there was someone in the audience that didn't agree with any of this stuff because he had a whole long career in the military, and it was all a nonsense, and the system knew what it was doing, and you know, touch me cap and all that. And he, to be fair, he sat and listened for about 7, 8, 9 hours, and he came in the dressing room at the end, and he was crying. He was crying.
Really?
Because he just realized, actually, it was real. And I'd never seen him cry before in my life. And within a week, probably less, it was a week when I found out, he'd gone back to his military mates and he rejected it all again because he'd gone back to default position. The software had gone back to default. And this is what happens to people. And, you know, these bloodlines that are manipulating the human society within what we call visible light within this world, on behalf of these archons within the hidden, they are hybrid bloodlines for a reason. They are part human because they have to operate here, and they have to be seen as human to operate here without being seen for what they are. And they are part non-human. Let's call them archon. Their various forms. Reptilian is a form they take for sure in genetic terms. And that means that if you go back from the hologram, that means that, you know, they're not just genetically far closer than the general population are to this archontic force. They are in vibrational frequency terms very much closer. And thus they can be possessed more powerfully than the general population, or the general population can to a large extent as well. And let's look at that possession. People think about, and this of course is an ancient thing, possession, but you think about possession. People think about possession as the body's possessed. The body's not possessed, not directly. The electromagnetic fields from which the body is projected as a hologram, that's what's possessed. And what does possessed mean? Connected with. If you have these archontic entities in an energetic form, and they can pull your electromagnetic fields, your energetic fields beyond the body into their frequency band through low vibrational emotion caused by low vibrational experiences and perceptions, then they can make a contact with you. And once that connection's made in frequency terms, their information can be fed into the possessed energetic field. Now, at its most extreme, that information becomes so infused into the electromagnetic field, the energetic level, that the information being projected as the hologram starts to reflect that infusion of possessed energetic information. And thus, that's when we have shape-shifting. Because now the hologram, which has been projected from the human field, is now being projected from a human field infused with more and more information that's not from the human field. Thus, the hologram projected from it must reflect that, and it starts to shift into a different form. And this is where you get this exorcist level of possession, where the face starts to distort. But there is that extreme level of possession, and then there's the, I would say, overwhelmingly general level of possession, which is simply pulling people in frequency terms on an energetic level into the frequency realm of the distortion in its endless forms. And at that point, the distortion starts to impact, here we go, that word again, on the perception of the possessed person.
Yeah.
Starts to influence the way they see themselves, they see the world. When you look at psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists, these people that dominate the system, they are classic expressions of this distortion, this inversion of human normal, well, not just human, but balanced response. I mean, you'd never get a balanced response that abuses children, that tortures children, that sacrifices children. This is a fiercely extreme inversion of the natural response because it's coming from the distortion. And things like, of course, the energy generated by sacrifice is perfect for this distortion in its various forms to feed off because it's in the frequency. And you have this. A lot of people have researched this, and I have massively over the years, and that's elite pedophilia. When you research and follow this bloodline network, invariably you'll find pedophilia and Satanism at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And why? What is it about pedophilia? This is what I would say from my research. The energy that this distortion, this archontic force wants to feed off more than anything else is the energy of children before puberty. Because we see puberty as a hormonal chemical change, but that's just a reflection in the hologram of an energetic change that's going on. They want that energy before that change takes place. And so the pedophile in human form, if you like, the possessed pedophile, is the holographic vehicle for drawing off that energy, which the possessing entity then feeds off. That's why you find pedophilia at such an extraordinary ratio in these so-called upper echelons of society. And another massive part of this manipulation of the distortion, in an extreme way with the bloodlines and an extreme way with the extremely possessed, but in a very significant way with the general population also. And that's to close down the vortex we call the heart chakra. Within, of course, I don't have to really tell people who are listening to this show on your station, mate, because they'll be aware of this.
Sure.
But for the few that won't be, very quickly,
yep.
This energetic field, or one level of it that I'm talking about, beyond the body and interpenetrating the body, has different vortexes in it called chakras, which in the East, in Sanskrit, I think means wheels of light. And the prime one is the heart vortex, which is the center of the main seven, top of the head, crown vortex, the third eye vortex on the forehead, the throat vortex of communication, the heart vortex, and then you go down into what I call the belly chakras, which are about emotion. And if you look at it, what's happened in human society is we've been moved from being a heart society where the point of interaction is through the heart. Again, we're into putting the greater good first, love in its true sense, integrity. We've been turned into a gut society, a belly society, and that's the chakra for emotion. We interact overwhelmingly with the world, humans, these days, from a point of view of emotion, not heart.
Yeah.
And so what's happens is once this heart vortex is closed, or at least closed more than it should be, then we start to lose empathy. We start to lose compassion. We start to lose all the things that come from the heart center. Now, if you look at these bloodlines, Henrik, one thing they do not have, one thing psychopaths and sociopaths do not have, and narcissists do not have, if you look at even mainstream psychological research, is empathy. It's empathy and compassion and a feeling for what you're making other people feel by your actions. Now, what I found fascinating, having said that, was that while I was writing Perception Deception, I was just reading this article by a Swiss clairvoyant called Anton Steiger. And he wasn't talking about archons or reptilians or anything. He was just telling his life story and some of the things he's experienced as a clairvoyant. And what can clairvoyant do? They can see into the infinite energy field further than most people normally can on the level of visible light. And this is what he said, just in the middle of this article, out of nowhere. I was just giving an example of what he sees. And I say this is incredibly profound in terms of how this world is manipulated and perceptions are manipulated and behavior is manipulated. He said this: when I see people in business or politics who are particularly trapped by the material world, for example, I notice that they no longer have any light bodies at all. These are these other levels of energetic self. In many of these people, he said, the point of light at the heart chakra, which is otherwise always present, is no longer visible to me. Instead, I see something like a layer of shiny tar around them, in which a monstrous being in the shape of a lizard can be distinguished. When such people speak on television, for example, I see a crocodile shape manifesting itself around the person like a concave mirror. I don't see the light of their throat or forehead chakras. And what he's describing in that way is this possessing entity, which in this case seems to take a reptilian form, doesn't have to, actually controlling the perceptions of the person by literally hijacking their energetic fields. This is what's going on. And so when you look at that Swiss banker who gave an anonymous interview, I'm not surprised he did, actually anonymous, given what he said, in 2011 it was, for the Russian magazine Noviden. And he said that these people, these bankers that he worked with in Switzerland, these people are corrupt, sick in their minds, so sick they are full of vices, and those vices are kept under wraps on their orders. Some of them rape women, they're pedophiles, and many, he said, are into Satanism. Quote, when you go into some banks, you see these satanistic symbols, like in the Rothschild Bank in Zurich. These people are controlled by blackmail because of the weaknesses they have. They have to follow orders, and they will be exposed, they will be destroyed, even killed. So when you look, I mean, what a classic, Henrik, what a classic example of lack of empathy.
Yeah.
That the banking system, look at what they've done since, not what they did before, but look what they've done since 2008.
Sure, yeah.
They have destroyed billions of lives while they keep giving themselves bigger and bigger bonuses after taking vast amounts of money from the very people through governments that they're crushing. What level of lack of empathy? What level of distortion, what level of inversion does it take to act like that? And I said these people are fundamentally and massively possessed by this obstacle course.
I think it's completely according to plan in the point of reformation. We are in the global state of the system right now as well. I think it really plays into that. And why don't we pick that up right after a break here, David? I want to discuss a few more things before we do that, though. Obviously, for those who you know, don't know yet, then we're talking about David's new book, The Perception Deception, an excellent read. It brings a lot of, you know, the dots together. It's a great read. And of course, you can find more on David's website, davidicke.com. Certainly give us some more details about the book or anything else, David, that you want to. But I also want to mention a little bit about the People's Voice. You guys are up and running. You're doing material around the clock, I believe. And you do your own show on Friday, if I have that correct. Give us some details about that, David.
Yeah, well, last May, I did an interview with a national newspaper in Britain, and it was the same old bloody nonsense. He'd written the story before he arrived. I hadn't read a single word of any book I'd ever written, but still came to his conclusions and repeated them. And it just hit me, like, let's see if we can start our own media. And not just doing a show about conspiracy and banking scams and 9/11s, although absolutely doing that, but also looking at the nature of reality and all the suppressed science and the suppressed health and endless different subjects. The only kind of common theme is that which the mainstream media won't touch and discuss. And so we didn't have the money for it. It's a non-profit making operation. So we raised money on a crowdsourcing appeal and managed to get on air on the 25th of November out of Wembley, London. And we've been doing 24 hours ever since. Obviously, there was always going to be teething troubles and things like that because, you know, you were basically working it out on air. Because my feeling was, well, A, we had to get on air to start generating some money to stay on air. But also, you know, why wait until you've got it perfect and think of all the interviews and all the information that is not going out where you're trying to get it perfect. But, you know, now it's got to a point where it's really where I envisage it to be at this point. I'm delighted with it. How long it continues depends on how, you know, whether we generate the money to make it continue. But what it's putting out 24 hours a day worldwide I'm absolutely delighted with it. And we've got some fantastic people here, a lot of people that weren't fantastic who came in to disrupt and distort have gone. And what's left are really diamond people who have what we're trying to do as their focus. So it's a really pleasant place to work. I mean, I'm only going to be here for another like 3 weeks actually in the office, because I said from the start that I would give it my total focus from about August time right the way through to the spring and the end of March, because and get it going and do everything I can to help. But of course I have other things to do as well, so I'll be going back and working with them from home, but not here, and getting on with other things that I do as well, which I need to do. But you know, it's at a point now where if we can just generate the money, it costs about £50,000 a month to run, even though it's non-profit. It's very expensive to do this, but given that, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands are watching regularly, you know, if people could give £1 a month, just 50,000 people, we're there ongoing. And we're starting to get advertising now, which is you know, takes time to generate. So we're hopeful that we can just get over this this transition into being self-sufficient. And if we do, then it will be ongoing. But I'm absolutely delighted with it. You know, the quality of people. We also have you on, Henrik.
Yeah, I know exactly. We gotta talk about that.
Yeah, because we have some fantastic people on here every day from all over the world, giving information and experience that they would never get a chance with in the mainstream media. So I'm just delighted with it. It's virtually everything I envisaged it to be, and to have got to that point since November 25th is fantastic and testament to the people at work here.
Absolutely. The website that we want to give out for that is thepeoplesvoice.tv. That's, you know, you can stream it right from there. I believe you have all the links from davidicke.com as well.
Yeah. By the way, what we're doing is if anyone's got websites out there and they want to put a little box somewhere on it with the live output, you know, if they well, in fact, we'll make it public soon. We'll put codes up there that people can embed it. Because the more we can get it out there, the information out there, the better. And you know, I've got it on my own site now, and it's a great addition, really.
Absolutely. Embed the player right there. So heads up on that. And of course, the book again, then go to davidicke.com to pick up copies. Really good. It's a brick. It's, you know, almost 1,000 pages. So there's a lot to chew on right there. But David, we'll take a short break here. We'll pick up after the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Times are getting harder. Times are getting bad. Things seem too far gone. Losing ground again. Got to get started. From the right end, take a look at what you're doing. You need a helping hand. I'm gonna put you back on the right track. I'm gonna put you back on the right track. Yeah, I'll take you where you started from. Help you up and make you strong. Cause I'm here, right here. I'm here. So don't count me out, baby. I'm here, right here. I'm here. So don't count me out, baby. I'll take you where you started from. Help you up and make you strong. Cause I'm here. Times are getting harder. Times are getting bad. Things seem just too far gone. You're losing ground again. You got to get started from the right end. I'm on a